Welcome, everybody, to another edition of the NerdWatch podcast. I, of course, am G Money. It is it's the ending of January. We've come to the end of January. And that, of course, means that the NerdWatch has another week of nerd news that we're going to be taking care of. But even though nothing really happened. Well, we got the new Mighty Morphin Power Rangers trailer.
We got a couple things this week.
We did get a couple of cool things.
New Star Wars logo.
New Star Wars.
The Last Jedi.
The Last Jedi. We got that.
A new Tekken.
That's right.
We got really a new Tekken.
Yeah, we got that.
Resident Evil 7 came out.
Yes, yes, we did.
I take it back. A bunch of stuff happened.
Yeah, it was pretty active.
What the hell am I talking about?
Yeah, I have no idea what you're talking about.
Frontier got released on Netflix.
Frontier got released on Netflix.
Yeah, I didn't want to say it, but I love Jason Momoa, so I'm not going to say it.
Is it bad?
It's not like, as good as you want it to be with Momoa in it, man.
It's trying to be Game of Thrones, but sitting
the,
that
the opening credits are like, yeah, in a Frontier
pretty much
American.
Called Drogo.
Pretty much.
Nice.
As an Indian-Irishman, apparently.
Nice. We have a very...
Yeah, he plays half Indian, half Irish.
Declan Harp.
Yes, he does. That's what I heard. Anyway, we'll be talking about that later on during the show, or later on another show, possibly.
Yeah, we covered
because
it.
This time... We have a very special guest in studio that we're going to introduce here shortly. But first, let me introduce my compatriots, of course, to my right in a very weird position today as far as the NerdWatch goes. I am G Money. Two seats over from me, of course, is the chairman of the comic book board. Alika is in the house. The punk
chairman.
Rock.
Wasn't
the punk
CEO
rock.
Last week?
Who was? He's chairman.
This is Trump's America.
To his right, of course, is the one and only punk rock superstar Ganon in the house. And last but not least, the man who is going home with Resident Evil. The man who's going home with Resident Evil 7 to play it tonight, which I'm very jealous about.
Thanks, Ganon.
Format. The gaming guru himself is in studio. And sitting next to me tonight, ladies and gentlemen, is a legend, an artist, a sculptor, a painter, an all-around Rhodes Scholar, as they say. What's the name that I'm looking for? It's on the tip of my tongue.
A comic artist?
Not a comic book artist. No. A jack of all trades, I guess you could say. He's a, what do they call those guys? For crying out loud.
Jeff?
Most of the artists I know are
a journeyman.
We are here with the legendary Jeff Isherwood, the man who has done work for both Marvel and DC Comics, done some work in Hollywood as
the
well.
The only ones that matter. Come on.
So,
if we're going to be real with it, Todd.
We're going to be talking to the one and only Jeff Isherwood this evening. Jeff, how are you, sir?
Oh, very good, very good.
Well, I'm so glad that you could make it to the islands. What brought you here?
I think it was United.
Oh, was it United? How was the service? Was it good?
Well, I'll tell you, after 7.5 hours on that last leg, you feel like you're strapped into a race car, and you just strapped in there, and once in a while you got to get off for a pit stop, but you're just go, right? Mm-hmm. You know, and watch a couple of really bad movies.
Right? No, I got you.
And things like that.
Look at me and look at you. And then you tell me how I feel in those chairs for 7 hours. It's horrible.
I completely understand
where you're coming
absolutely.
From.
You need first class, buddy.
I know. Right? I know exactly where you're coming from.
There you go.
It gives the words cattle car a whole new meaning for me. Anyway, Jeff, thank you for coming and being here and gracing us with your presence. First off, how did you manage to hook up with Alika Seki from Maui Comics and Collectibles?
Well, I must admit, I approached you first.
Yeah, he made the fatal mistake of approaching a comic store guy.
Truth be told, on our last day here, we're here for a couple of weeks. Mm-hmm. We have to get out of our place by 11 o'clock in the morning, and our plane doesn't leave till 11:30 at night.
Goodness gracious.
What are we going to do for 12 hours? Well, we could sit on the beach some more, right? I said, well, I wonder if there's a comic book shop on this island.
Right.
And sure enough, here it is, and here I am now. So we set up a little get-together, and I'm going to come by. That will be on the 4th of February.
February 4th, this Saturday, from about 1 to 6, about that. 2 to 6.
It's not this coming weekend.
It's
the one
in about 2 weeks. I'm sorry. Yeah, not this Saturday.
And so, I'll come by. And
you have original art, which has really been a hot thing lately.
So what you're saying is even when you're on vacation, you're working. Got it.
Yeah. I don't want to get right.
It's funny because I feel
I do not want to get
comic artists come here on vacation, and of course I'm like, yes, of course we want you to be in the store. But at the same time, they're on vacation. Jeff's amazing wife Amanda's right over there.
Amanda's
actually
there.
She's the reason he's here doing this and dealing with us bozos.
Good.
Otherwise, he'd be enjoying his vacation.
Speak for yourself, bozos.
I don't know. I don't want to get rusty.
Bozos.
Yeah. If I'm sitting around, I'm still drawing.
Yeah.
Of course.
I love that. And
it's very hard to stop.
These sketch covers at the beach while you're just chilling today.
Wow, that is amazing stuff.
Cool. I know, it's kind of hard trying to draw with sand blowing at you and waves.
You can see them.
Now the wind's been whipping lately.
Jeff, just so we can get this out of the way, we'll talk about it now and later on in the show. Jeff will be here live at Molly Comics and Collectibles on February 4th for you guys to do commissions, sketches, signatures, and all that great stuff.
And plus original art from
original
issues
art,
of Doctor Strange.
Very
and Conan
cool stuff.
And,
that's right.
But before we get into the interview with Jeff, I do want to talk about this. First off, want you guys to make sure you like us on Facebook at facebook.com/TheNerdWatch. Please follow us on Twitter at NerdWatch Nation. On YouTube, you can follow us at NerdWatch Nation as well. And on Instagram at @the_NerdWatch. And please visit our Patreon page, patreon.com/TheNerdWatch. And help a growing podcast grow further.
More?
Yeah, that's the one I'm looking for. Thanks, Alika.
I need to come up with a better line.
How about expand?
Expand.
Yeah,
I like,
there you go. Yeah.
Expand.
Get a thesaurus, man.
Expand. That's it. I like
money
that.
So we can screen. Yeah. So we can green screen like Hobbiton behind.
Yeah. So we can. We just want the money to buy a green screen. That's what it's for. But yeah, please check us out at patreon.com/TheNerdWatch and do what you can for us. That'd be great. We'd love to be able to do bigger and better things.
We'd love to take your money.
Yeah, we absolutely would. And not for nefarious
reasons.
Take
is such a harsh word.
Yeah. Well, except. Listen. Alika, do you want to do your comic book list, or you want to save it for our next show? Because I figure we'll just
do another show.
That's what I'm saying. We'll do it. Yeah. Let's do it. Jeff's.
Usually, I go over the weekly
precious.
Comics on a list, but
yeah.
We can cover that in another episode.
Unless of course, Jeff wants to.
He's like, I want to know what's going on.
He is the man of the hour this week. So, but I think people want to learn more about Jeff.
Yeah, you've got so many stories, we don't want to squeeze them out.
Glenn Fabry, Slayer, Repentless. That'll be good.
Really?
Yeah.
I didn't even circle that one to list.
Glenn Fabry, he's a terrific artist.
Wow, okay, I got enough of those, though.
Thanks, Slayer. And it's Slayer, dude. What are you thinking?
Is that the band Slayer?
Yes.
Oh, cool.
You ordered it, you didn't even know.
All right, we'll just mention Slayer Repentless right now by Glenn Fabry.
Oh, my God.
One of those English chaps, you know, draw really well.
And
great.
This is going to lead me into, because Eric Powell is also doing a variant cover, that Hillbilly number 5 is also coming out tomorrow.
Oh, very cool.
Which is a very popular
very, very
series.
Cool. I will
That's
mention,
all I'm going to say about
it. I will mention this, though. It is, of course, today is 20% off Tuesday at Maui Comics and Collectibles, this and every Tuesday. And then, of course, every Wednesday is New Comic Book Wednesday. So check him out. 333 Derry Road, Kahului. It's Maui Comics and Collectibles.
You forgot new full price comic book.
Oh, that's
Wednesday.
Right. I'm sorry.
My favorite day is full price comic book
Wednesday.
Wednesday.
Sorry. Totally forgot about that.
So it's Wednesday you come in and get milked on Derry Road.
That's right.
I think that's where the name came from.
Yeah.
Oh, man.
Sounds legit.
All right. He's only been on here for like 8 minutes, and I already got to hire him for the show.
He's funnier than you.
I know. He's right? Much funnier than me.
Not that
final.
Maybe I should just cut this interview short then.
No, you're G Money, baby. Money in the bank. Come on.
I'm just kidding.
Your name begins with G, though, so technically you could be the new G Money.
That is true. That is very true. So, Jeff. Let's talk about you. Let's get into your.
Do we have to?
Yes, I'm certainly very interested. First off, I want to talk about where you're originally from.
I was born in Quantico, Virginia.
Wow.
My father was in the Marines, getting his ROTC. Service done, mm-hmm. And I happened to be born at the time he was still there.
Wow.
So, yeah, and so I grew up on the Chesapeake Bay for a while. That's where it started.
Wow. Quantico, isn't that close to the isn't that close to FBI headquarters out there?
Exactly.
Very
and
cool.
Marine Corps That's headquarters and FBI headquarters, yes.
That is very cool. Now, Were you a young lad that found yourself gravitating towards comic books and movies and things like that, or what kind of young kid was walking around Quantico, Virginia, or in the Chesapeake Bay, as it were?
Oh yes, absolutely. I liked more humor comics as a kid, and kind of discovered Spider-Man, I think, when I was 8, 9, 10 years old. Mm-hmm. So it was at the age of 10 when I decided I want to draw comic books for a living.
Interesting.
It came from a picture of Charles Schulz's house. I think he lived in Minnesota. And I saw this nice studio, and he worked at home, and I said, that's for me. I'm not commuting anywhere. That's awesome. Right? I want to just get up, eat my breakfast, and go to my drawing table. This is great. And then I thought, well, how do you get to be an artist? And I was looking, and I would read comics, and I'd see, you know, Stan the Man Lee and Jazzy Johnny Romita and Big John Buscema, and I said, yeah, these comics are done by these people with these great nicknames, and this looks like a lot of fun. And these guys, the comics come out every month. They must have regular jobs. You know, I'm 10 years old, right? That's the thinking.
Right.
How naive.
But exactly. But then I thought, yeah, you know? And then I found out once I got into drawing my own comics, I loved storytelling. And the whole thing just grew.
Speaking of that, did you ever get a parenthetical? Was there ever, like, Jeff?
Jeff the chef, you know.
Oh,
that's me.
Because you cook up greatness.
I can burn the hell out of anything on the barbecue.
Oh, is it an ironic?
Oh yeah,
that's awesome.
So, see, I got Gannon in the cannon, but nobody wants to know why.
Yeah,
no. I certainly don't.
I don't either. So, Jeff, when did you realize that you? Because you said you at a young age you wanted to do comics. When did you realize that you were good at drawing?
It's too bad. My wife Amanda's over there.
When did you realize you were good at what you do?
She has seen a picture I drew when I was 11 years old.
Right.
I had drawn a picture of a skull and a vertebra, and I was identifying the parts because I was interested in anatomy. And it says, by Jeffrey Isherwood, room 104, the greatest artist in the world. So,
that's all, yes.
And it's been downhill ever since, I tell you. Just like Orson Welles' career.
Trying to reach that skull and vertebrae moment.
I know. I colored it in pink, which is pretty hilarious. So.
Hey, but that came into vogue. So you're kind of like ahead of the curve on that one.
Yeah.
So you had this. You were very aspirational as a young man.
Yes.
Now, jumping ahead. When did you finally get serious about it? And when did were you in high school or when you were in college? How did you get yourself out there?
I was serious about it from the get go
because
obviously at that when I was about 5, I would draw a line on a page and draw cars and then draw another line in cars. So I was doing that when I was younger, but my interest in figure drawing and learning anatomy. All of that picked up around 10, but I was very serious about it ever since. I would read comics and I would copy artists I liked. How does Rich Buckler draw a hand? And how does Gil Kane do his amazing anatomy? And all Neil Adams, all these artists. So I was copying them to learn.
Right.
And I was 16 years old when I first went to Marvel offices.
Interesting.
So you went as a teen. Oh, yes.
Wow.
Well, I went to the office and I met Marie Severin and Dave Cockrum.
Wow.
Now, a lot of fans may not know really who they are, right. were, but, and Dave, he was, oh, yeah, there it is.
We got a great cosplay of Jeff as the doctor.
You're going to have to put that right up to the camera.
I know.
We will. Anyway.
That's another thing.
We'll have it edited in.
But, yeah, so. Man. I met them, and Marie and Dave were really gracious, and they looked at my work, and of course it wasn't ready for publication yet, but they were very encouraging. Awesome. Maybe they saw something. I don't know. So, but then every year, like I think it was 18 when I sent again, but every year I would send some kind of submission, and at the beginning you could even walk into the Marvel office and see people. Like now, it's probably some kind of fortress with
security. Now there's gun turrets mounted to the front. Right.
Yeah, absolutely.
And 209s in the lobby.
But then it was when I was 22. It was a year of graduating. It was a few months after I graduated from university.
Mm-hmm. Where'd you go to university?
Concordia University in Montreal, because the whole family moved there. My father got a job teaching at McGill University, and we moved up when I was 11. So wow. I moved to Montreal and lived there for 41 years? Now we live in Ottawa in Ontario, nation's capital of Canada. So a lot of artists and career fans, I should say, think I'm Canadian, but I am American. So, right.
You're a dual citizen, as it were.
Essentially, yes.
Oh, cool. So
that means.
So 22.
I live in Canada, but I'm still American.
That's right.
I'm still American. You better believe it.
So at 22, you walk in. You walk into Marvel, and what happens then?
I got a story, a 9-page story in Bizarre Adventures. Which one? I forget. It was black and white horror story. That did not lead to anything else. DC at the time was starting New Talent Showcase, so I sent some samples to them, and they gave me an 8-page Western horror story, and I penciled.
Hex, kinda.
Yes, it was the Ticker Blood was the name of this character. I guess he had ticks suck the blood out of him. I don't know.
Weird.
It's kind of odd.
All right.
Whatever. Obviously, a one shot, right?
Yeah.
So I penciled it, and they didn't have anybody to ink it, so they sent it back, and I got to ink it as well. Cool. But again, this was summer and fall of 1982. Were any of you born yet?
I was.
Oh yeah, I was. Oh yeah,
so I was 4. I was totally 1 year old during that.
Okay,
I was 4.
There you go. So, so in the spring of 83, I went back to New York. I have. Relatives that live on Long Island, so I went and stayed there, and I had a part-time job in Montreal, so my girlfriend at the time, I said, she took over my job doing drafting for a department store, floor plans and what have you.
Right.
And then, so I said, well, if this bombs, I can come back to my job. But I went down there, and I just stuck it out, and I went to, of all places, Red Circle, and Rich Buckler was editor there. Well, I knew that at the time.
Red Circle. Those are some cool books back in the...
Yeah, so he was doing Mighty Crusaders, and he gave me pages that were half-penciled. It's like roughed out in a few finished pencils, and he said, here, finish penciling these and give them in. So I worked for him for 3 days when Ralph Macchio at Marvel said, hey, Jeff, I have this Daredevil fill-in. How'd you like to do it? Okay, so he's there, and he's going. He's showing me Frank Miller pages, like right in my hand, you know, real ones.
You're just trying to fold them into your pocket.
Yeah, well, this was Miller's
happening.
Miller's Daredevil at the time, as you all may recall, when you were 1 year old, was it. You know, that was the cat's meow of comic books. So I was looking at that, and I was looking at the pages, and they're very simple in a way. Some of them, and it would be interesting. You'd see the face and a shape and an X on an inked page. And Klaus Janson would give the pages in with an X, and he'd have to let somebody in the bullpen fill in the big black areas. He wasn't going to do it. I guess he was so busy that it was just more expedient to say, look, instead of me spending time filling in black spots, I can just go to the next panel and somebody in the bullpen can just fill this in. No big deal. It was efficiency. Efficiency.
Yeah, that's efficient.
So I did that one, and then Ralph asked me to it was Power Man and Iron Fist. I did a couple issues of that. So that got me working at Marvel, and then after that, it started to roll, and I was working pretty much full-time for, 15, 16 years.
When these guys come up to you, and then you know they're part of Marvel, and then that's the door you're trying to kick down.
Mm-hmm.
When they look at you and critique your art, what is it that they look at and they go, this would be good for Daredevil, or this would be good for Strange, or Power Man and Iron Fist. What do they tell you when they looked at your work? Like,
I think what happened is it was more a matter of, we need a fill-in for Daredevil. This guy looks like he could do it.
I could handle it.
Yeah, I think
that's crazy,
because we say we break down the door to Marvel, but if you look at it the other way, it's really they're a publishing company.
Right.
They publish all these books. They need professional people who can do the job for them.
Got it. Okay,
who are capable of doing it.
That makes sense. Okay.
Yeah. So instead of us feeling like, oh, we're so lucky they picked us, right. we have to realize, no, we've trained to do the
right,
job,
right.
and therefore we
They're lucky to have us.
And not well, it's more a mutual kind of thing.
Sure.
But to answer your question, most probably the most famous thing happened is ultimately I really, really wanted to draw Conan of some sort. And the editor of the Conan books was at the time was Larry Hama. He is now pretty much single-handedly responsible for giving G.I. Joe or bringing Hull back to life.
I mean, and that must have been during that time, right? Because G.I. Joe's first issue was 82, 83, something like
yes.
that.
Yes, and then he was writing that. But since, of course, G.I. Joe nowadays, he writes all of those. So at the time, most of the editors were writers. So you could show your work to them, and they, yeah, it's good. I like it. I don't have anything for you.
Right.
That sort of thing.
Right, right.
Then I went to Larry's office, and I, you know, knock on the door, and he goes, "Hello, hello. You got an appointment to see me?" "Well, no, I don't." "Well, you know, you got to have an appointment if you want to see me." And I was like, "Uh oh, this guy's serious, right?" So, well, okay. And he looked at me. "No, nah, come here. Let me see your stuff. So, he looked through my pages, and I'd already drawn issues of the Daredevil and stuff, and he's going, "You don't know how to draw." There you wanted it. There's an
wow.
answer. You don't know how
for
to draw.
Critty, yeah, that's the juicy stuff you money wanted.
Whoa. Bam! But later, and this was much, much later, I found out because we met and talked with him in New York a few years ago. He said that he sat next to Neil Adams for 3 years and looked at portfolios. And Neil was again. He
got to be one of the harshest guys in the.
Yes, but harsh. But he was very honest about things, and mm-hmm. He saw so much material. He didn't have time. Again, we talk about time. He didn't have time to fuss over. Well, do a little of this, that, and that. He can size you up in a second. And the thing about artwork is, it's instant. You look at something, bang, you like it or
you don't.
You read it.
Right.
It's not like music. You have to listen for a bit. A book, you have to read some other things. It takes a little time. But that's the beauty, but that's the difficult thing about artwork, is that it's instant. So if you draw something and people don't really like it, it just isn't going to happen. And no matter what they say in art history and art museums where they give you a little description of what it is, if you don't like it, somebody can't talk you into liking it.
Right.
You might start to understand where they come from a little bit, but it's not your thing. And that's the way art is.
Right.
So for Larry he said he was easy on me compared to what Adams would do. But later on he said, well, that was the job, you know, because he's right. really a fairly jovial type of person. But at the time, everybody was afraid of him when they walked. Nobody wanted to go talk to him. But anyway, he gave me a Kull story, 8-page Kull story for Savage Sword.
Kull the Conqueror?
Kull the Conqueror.
Cool.
With the big scar on the eye.
Oh, Kull the Mailman.
Oh.
Yeah.
I thought he was talking about the Milkman. Didn't know that, wasn't sure.
On Derry Road.
On Derry Road. That was a callback. Sorry.
Yeah. Anyway. So he gave me this Kull story, and he goes, draw this, come back and see me next week. 8-page. So I penciled it, and I thought it was the best thing I ever did. I slaved over these pages, and I showed it, took them in. He goes, looking, no, it's all wrong. It's all wrong. So what did he do?
Lord.
He took out tracing paper. This was the interesting part. He overlaid each page, and he re-roughed out the whole story, and every panel he told me exactly what he was doing in the storytelling. Instead of me trying to get something like a cute kind of composition, he goes, no, you put this guy in the middle, he's got an axe, you put these two guys on either side, they're framing the figure, they're drawing your eye to look at it. And he showed how to draw the page so you lead the eye around the page. 8 pages of this story, every single panel, he showed me why. And he goes, go and draw this. I went back and I redrew the story based on his layouts, and I brought it back in. He goes, yeah, it's good. Here's another one. And he never said another word.
Wow.
But I think he was waiting to see, because some artists like, yeah, this guy, he doesn't know anything. And the artist would go off on their own tangent once
right,
again.
Right,
but
right.
He found that I followed what he did. It made sense to me, and I drew what he wanted. And he said he wanted...
He gave you more work?
Yeah, because he wanted artists who... He said, I want guys who can do like 99% of it right the first time. He says, I don't want to be like Jim Shooter tends to be, picking, micromanaging, picking over every panel, looking to make sure it's all right. He goes, I just So I got to talk to freelancers that are complaining to me all the time. I don't have to. I don't want to look at pages. Like, yeah, it looks good. Let's print it. So that was kind of this tossed off way of saying it, of course. But that's what he was looking for, was were people he could trust to do the job. And so he was – but he at the time, he told me he for the Barbarian titles he was running, he was trying to get a group of five or six, seven artists together to work on these titles and the Conan, Red Sonja, and these books.
Right.
So I wound up going to see him at about the right time because, again, in the early 80s, comics were still expanding a lot. So it was a very good time to get started in that industry. Yeah.
Now, as far as when – now that you've kind of established yourself and at these comic houses – when did you start? You started getting steady work. When did the you just got Daredevil? When did the other big books start coming your way?
When did you get on Doctor Strange?
Yeah, like when did you get on Doctor Strange? And when did you get
which is a '90s series, the one you worked on, right?
Or even the one that you really wanted to? When did you finally get your hands on Conan?
Well, it didn't take that long because I had been doing Swords of the Swashbucklers for a while, which was kind of fun. Mm-hmm. And right after Butch Geis had been drawing it, and he's really good, so I felt I had a lot to stand up to. And later on, I replaced him on Doctor Strange as well. Another fellow, excuse me, he's a terrific artist, and I've inked him a few times, and it's been a lot of fun. But it was the right office. He had an assistant, Mike Rockwitz,
right,
and Mike liked what I was doing, so he hired me to do Strange, and when I heard Strange was coming open, I said, "Oh, I'd love to draw Strange." And I was really much more interested in drawing him with the mystical visuals that you can have, rather than something like the Punisher, which is just shoot 'em ups.
Right.
And it's like more guns, the same old guns, and it's like that today. It's like, you know, when in doubt, just take out your gun and just shoot the hell out of something. Right. And it's just done ad nauseum even today. So I loved the idea of Strange with all the mystical elements, as I say.
Right.
And Conan, I just love the character as well. I always saw Conan as a real person compared to a lot of the costumed characters. And
he could happen in real life.
Yeah, there's somehow I just saw him that way, but also because you do see his face. A lot of costume characters, or an Iron Man never interested me because it's just this blank face.
Yeah,
like some people like that. Maybe it's easier to draw or something, but I always wanted to get the expression. And that's, again, another thing that I have to give Larry a lot of credit for stuff, but he even puts on his Facebook page a couple of things, like, number one, never draw anybody just standing there. And number two, any facial expression is better than none. And you sort of start with that, and you start with the acting, with the storytelling. So it's not just draw some nice angles and pictures.
Right.
You have to get inside the characters, each one, and you are. As you're drawing the characters, you are that character to make it convincing.
Right.
And the better you do put the acting in, just the better it comes across. So it's just like film that way, is the actors really drive any movie. How good they are really make it work or not.
So my assumption is, because you've been drawing these characters for decades, does your artwork change with with the new century? Does your artwork change with the culture, or does that even affect the way you draw your characters?
To me, I hope my drawing has improved just as I learn more about drawing and drawing people and what have you. But I usually don't try to draw in a specific style that way.
Okay.
And to me, I can't even tell you what my style is. I just draw, and how it comes out is how it comes out.
Gotcha.
So there you go.
Well, your success as an artist has led you to do a varied amount of different things. Number one, you're also a sculptor and a painter. Do you have any – I mean, I want to know if you have any examples in here, but what is it that you sculpt? Do you get away from what you normally do on the comic book page, or what do you do when you sculpt and paint?
Are you sculpting fruit?
Yeah.
Sculpting, I have not done a lot of it, very few, but what I've done more recently is on a couple of film projects when I had to create a character, I felt just doing a drawing would maybe not work so well, so I did make a couple of heads of sculpture, especially characters with big winged helmets, this sort of thing, so I could just imagine how it worked better. So I don't really have a lot of time for that. And painting, again, well, I've painted landscapes and just a lot of some of the regular things and then some superhero-type stuff, but nowadays, everything has gone digital to a large extent.
Right.
And towards the end of the 90s, when I was working on Conan, when they were doing the three-issue miniseries of Conan, and I got a call from one of the fellows at Marvel, and he said, just stop drawing. We've dropped the license for Conan. And that was it for me.
And that's right when Dark Horse kind of picked it back up, right?
Dark Horse picked it up, but that was it for me at Marvel. Well, I had been drawing Conan and nothing else. Wasn't getting any other type of work. And editors I had worked for were no longer there. In the late 90s, the industry shrunk quite a bit.
Right.
So I had to scramble looking for something else. And living in Montreal was very good because feature films had just started being made there more often.
Right.
The Bone Collector was one that was sort of started the ball rolling. And I don't know if you want to we're moving into that.
Oh, no. Matter of fact, I'm glad you segued. Very talented at that, by the way. Another skill that you have, obviously.
Did you do storyboards for them?
You did. That was the thing as I was going to bring it up is that Jeff has worked with, because I'm a movie guy, Jeff has worked with guys like Richard Donner, and he's worked with guys like Bryan Singer. So, and you were doing storyboards and things. Can you discuss a little about some of the things you did with Bryan Singer and Richard Donner, what projects you were working on at the time?
Yes, of course. My first job was, now I think it's listed in Rotten Tomatoes as the worst movie of all time, was Battlefield Earth.
Hey, it's still – people know
However,
that movie, though. It's
It was – yes, it was fascinating that for that being my first movie experience.
Oh, wow.
Because I got an interview with Patrick Tatopoulos from the revised Godzilla and Independence Day. So that part was amazing because he's a really terrific artist in his own right, a really talented guy. So I interviewed for him, and – so it was a crazy situation that I somehow got an interview exactly when he happened to be looking for a concept artist. I was the last person he interviewed, and he just then said, okay, you're it. You know, you draw all these comic books. You can draw anything. You have an organic style like I do. And let's go, you know, because he was supposed to design all the sets, all the costumes, all the props, everything himself. And as the production designer, you don't have time. So
you guys, for most of you that are watching and or listening, Patrick Tatopoulos is, you will see him on some huge, big budget films. You'll look at his, he's got the longest name in the credits. It's, you know, Patrick Tatopoulos. He's a big deal. He's also been a judge on that Face Off show on Sci-Fi as well.
Okay. Yeah. It happened to meet somebody who was really good for giving me some background on what works well in film compared to maybe comics, which is definitely different. And from that, I was able to get regular work on films in Montreal. And I worked on a couple of TV series. The Being Human was one.
Oh.
And what they call the U.S., not the British one, but the U.S. was shot in Montreal. And also worked, you were mentioning Donner. That was Timeline was the movie that they made.
That's the one with Paul Walker. It's based on the Michael Crichton book.
Yes.
I love that movie.
And for him, he just wanted large beats, a colored drawing of a given shot. So most of them were battle scenes. So we were working out, and he had a second unit director who was directing a lot, who was putting together the big battle scenes. So he wanted to see what those would look like. And that was I worked on that for a while. I did a whole bunch of those. When X-Men came to town, I was I had actually met Bryan Singer back in 2000. He was there ostensibly to direct Confessions of a Dangerous Mind, which he ultimately did not do. But I did have get down to sit and talk with him a little about X-Men.
Confessions of a Dangerous Mind, is that the one that George Clooney ended up directing? Is that the one?
Yes, it's the Chuck Barris story.
The Chuck Barris story. Yeah, that's right. Okay, yeah, okay.
So, but I did was able to talk to Brian a little bit about the costumes, for example, in the original X-Men, and as he was saying, well,
okay, Jeff, just don't mean to interrupt because I want to hear the story.
Go.
You've mentioned a very sensitive subject.
Don't say anything on my account.
Here we go.
Mr. I don't matter. I'm just a fan.
Yes, yes.
Mr. Secchi, just so you know, he's very sensitive about the he's very sensitive about the X-Men movies. He doesn't like them. And he hates the costumes.
Like,
no, it's just it's the costumes that really get to me, to be honest with you. The lack of.
So what is it? What is it about
the lack of costumes
in the movie X-Men?
He's not a fan of the leather.
He hung out with Brian Singer. Now you're making me look like a jerk in front of the guy.
Hey, no. He said, I was just following his lead. Anyway,
well.
So when you talked to Brian, what was that like?
Love to have the yellow spandex. Please give me the yellow spandex.
What Brian said, first of all, about the costumes was that they tried the yellow and black costumes.
I heard that,
like,
and they said it looked goofy, and then they went to the black leather.
Exactly, because it just didn't work. And he said he was drawn to the X-Men because he's a gay man and he's out as gay, and he felt that the X-Men as mutants
were an
outcast.
Especially in the '90s, mm-hmm. even before the movies were coming out,
yeah,
it was like kind of because there was a lot of gay activism in the '90s, and so a lot of parallels were drawn even when in the comics and stuff as they were going on.
Yes,
they kind of latched on to Angel, and then they played on that in the movies too a little bit.
Right. So he latched on. Or he liked the idea of the X-Men working on that. So. Anyway, that we had a short discussion on that point because I spoke with him once, really, at that time, and then he left, and they filmed a movie somewhere else, that Confessions movie. But eventually it came back, and so it was Days of Future Past that was being filmed in Montreal, and in a way it was not a big surprise that I started working on it because pretty well anybody in Montreal who ever worked in films worked on that. They had over 1,000 people in Montreal working. It's like everybody.
Wow.
However, I did have a couple of really fun jobs. So I started off designing some props. So the Cerebro machine you see in that film?
Yeah, the updated.
I designed that one.
Oh, cool.
And some other
did
things.
Did you work on any of the costume at all in that one?
No.
I'll tell you the truth. Yeah. While I do have gripes with the original X-Men movies,
mm-hmm.
that Days of the Future Past was probably, percentage-wise, the most satisfying costume so far in the X-Men movie series. Like, they got Bishop pretty right. You know, they got Blink right.
It's my second favorite X-Men movie.
All the future mutants were pretty good.
Yeah, he was, as time went on and then into Apocalypse, it was his point to try to get the costumes to look more like the comics in that way. Although, of course, they're a little more elaborate because comics you can draw really
elaborate.
Yeah, it's
hard to do plates and...
Yeah, and just to draw it on every panel, it would just take forever. You know, for Iron Man's Mark 42 kind of thing, you can't do that in a comic. It would just take too long to draw it in a book.
Right.
That's the thing. Which you have to understand that. However, what I did get to do, though, is a lot of storyboards after because... He had a fellow, Brian Smrz, S-M-R-Z is his name.
He's no vowels?
No vowels.
I've seen his name in the credits before.
He was on
a lot of stuff.
Yeah, he was on Iron Man. He was a stuntman originally. He had a brother, unfortunately, who died in a stunt crash back in 1986, I think it was, when he was quite young. So Brian was there to do, called second unit, but he was doing all the action and stunt scenes. But he was working, he had storyboards done all for him, but he was getting storyboards from Los Angeles, and he said, I can't use 90% of these. He was telling the production, I need somebody right here to draw for me because we're designing the stuff right now. I can't have stuff sent. I finished the props and they sent me over to work for him. So a lot of the action stuff for the modern day or the 1970s scenes, I would say I storyboarded a lot of those. And then they started filming, so instead of working daily with him, he just said, here's the script, storyboard every scene with Quicksilver in it. Just do it.
You storyboarded Quicksilver scenes?
Yes.
Wow, so, that's crazy. That is crazy.
The famous kitchen scene. Of course, the time, but what they did was, I was not told it was supposed to be around a circular
around
room
the moon, right.
and all that. So the whole 2001 thing... was we're like watching the movie and go, oh wow, look at that. But a lot of the it was great, but a lot of the little bits would happen. Like, he would bring all the pots and pans. Well, I had all the kitchen knives pointing up. And at one point, when the bullet's coming along, and he comes over and he goes, moves it over here,
yeah.
and he sets the guys up, moves them to punch each other. Like, yeah. I was drawing all this stuff. And that's so then they're cool. Standing, then times come back, pow, you know?
Right.
So, and the scene where he breaks Magneto out of his cell.
Yeah. That, yeah.
And the guy's all duct taped inside the elevator, all that
See,
kind of
now,
stuff.
See, now that is quite a claim to fame. Now, while I don't enjoy all of the X-Men movies and everything, you are, partially responsible for one of the only saving graces of that series.
It was Quicksilver.
Quicksilver series.
I know, it was fun.
So, I mean, if you're going to be part of those movies, that's the part to be a part of, of course.
But you have to realize storyboarding. Well, okay, for visual effect scenes with computer graphics, you need very, very specific work and very specific planning to get it to work. But most of the time, it's a basic guide, and when something gets down to real filming and shooting, they change so much stuff around. Hmm. It helps them plan the shots and that kind of thing. So when I see stuff I've storyboarded, I tend to recognize it, but I know it's not shot by shot.
Right,
it's just
right.
That's not really how it works. And Brian is a notorious tinkerer. In fact, we would never even get full scripts from him to read, and a lot of times where there really was none, it's because he's always, always fiddling with it. For example, in that movie, you see Magneto picks up RFK Stadium and drops it around the White House.
Right.
Well, originally, when I had gone into the art department, we had seen a shot of him taking the Washington Monument, hurling it like a javelin right through the Capitol building dome.
Oh,
that would have been really dramatic.
And the idea that Sentinels were going to be introduced there.
Wow.
However, then there was a scene where Nixon has to escape back to the White House to go in his bunker, and they felt that was too clumsy, and they didn't want a car chase, so they said, let's just scrap the other, let's have it happen at the whole thing happen at the White House. So they had spent 3 weeks, paid artists all the kinds of money to do all this big elaborate artwork, gone. And I went in one day, because I saw this, like, wow, because when I first went there, a lot of this was going on already, and I walked next and I say, wow, that's RFK Stadium being picked up. Wow, that's going to be great. I just saw the first shot of it and knew they had changed. And then, sure enough, in the film, it was great. So then, more recently, for Apocalypse, I just did some prop design. And I guess, what was the thing that... Well, I had designed a couple of swords and some of the stuff at the beginning for the Egyptian part. And I guess the thing we recognize most is at one point I was asked to do a portrait of Mystique, who was they were going to put her on Time magazine as Woman of the Year or something like this. This was the plan. So we're watching the movie, and you see Storm go into her little hut there, and there's a picture of Mystique on the wall.
Right.
Have you all remember
that
one?
Yeah, I remember that.
And I'm going, that's what they did with it.
That was your drawing.
Like, that's where I, that's what I mean. They took something and put it there. It's really funny. So, and then Psylocke's katana is another thing that I spent a fair bit of time designing. You don't really get a lot of it in the film. I mean, you don't really see a lot of what she's doing. But nevertheless, I was able to design that, and that was kind of fun.
That's very cool, considering the fact that no one was paying attention to her katana anyway.
Well, I did get one chance when the katana was ready, finally. I was asked to go over and check it out, see how it came out for real. And they said, oh, no, they're filming at the set. It's not in the office. So I went over, and sure enough, there's a scene where Apocalypse is standing in the hallway, and he's got his four Sogo horsemen behind him. He's got Fassbender and
Psylocke
there.
Fassbender, Olivia Munn.
Alexander Ship, Storm, and Angel, right? The four of them there. And that was fascinating to watch because first they spent about 15 minutes fiddling with Oscar Isaac's costume, trying to get all the little pieces just glued on so they wouldn't fall off and get this touching up his silver paint and his gray paint on his face, the whole thing, right? But finally, he kept doing this one shot. He'd go, all will be revealed soon, my children. And that's what he was doing, right? Over and over. Then Singer would go, I could do that 15% slower. All will be revealed soon, my children. Now, can you do it again? But make sure the camera only starts panning in once he turns to face the camera. Like, over and over. Wow. But it's because he was trying all these different options so that the editor, when he got to edit, right. It's not that he did it wrong. It's just, let's see which one plays better when we edit together. So he did that, like 20 different variations on that. And then the thing I liked was they would cut and then they would do some more touch-ups, right? And the other actors were like, yeah. And then the Psylocke sword was crooked, and then Alexander would go and fix it up. But the whole time, Fassbender's standing there as Magneto. He's like, he's standing there as this.
Fully Magneto.
He's in character. Yeah.
I was there about 20, 25 minutes to half an hour, and he was like that the whole time. He is Magneto. That's it. He just lived as him. I thought that was impressive.
That is quite impressive. Now, you working with this, do you enjoy working with these characters?
No, it sucks.
No, because there's some guys.
Do you enjoy working?
No.
Ladies and gentlemen, legendary interviewer G Money.
No, you want to try that again?
No. There are some guys that enjoy working with just the page. They move on to something like props, or they move on to something like storyboarding in the movies, and they're like, I don't like that. I can't be as creative. I want to do my stuff. Are you like that, or do you just enjoy the process of the drawing and just seeing it come to life?
Well, whatever the job is, if you're a professional, you have to get interested in it.
Right.
And granted, some things are more difficult than others to get interested, but if you're bored by something and not really interested, it's going to show. Mm. And whoever the audience out there is going to know it looks kind of flat. So, but still, yes. When it comes back to drawing comics, I really enjoy drawing comics more so than anything else. Right. However, those jobs pay better, and it certainly is. it certainly is worthwhile. And I have to say, it's a lot of fun working with some of these directors and what have you, because it's you get to meet and get a little interaction with them and kind of see how they tick a little bit. Every director is a little different, because I've worked with John McTiernan, and I worked with Chaz Palminteri.
What did you work with John on?
That was Rollerball.
You work with McTiernan on Rollerball, the remake with LL Cool J?
Yeah, that is crazy.
I was on TV the other day.
And I did costume designs for that.
Crazy.
And then, of course, the ultimate one, which is the oddest one, was this past year was Doctor Strange.
Okay.
A movie which I really, really wanted to try to work on, but I couldn't find a production, nothing going on there. And yet, 2 weeks before the premiere, I get this email from this vice president of operations and procurement at Marvel. Dear Jeff, we'd like to thank you for all your fine work on Doctor Strange all those years ago. We'd like to invite you and a guest to come to Hollywood for the world premiere. And we're going to send – here's money for the trip. Wow. And if you can't go, keep the money, but we'd love to see you, kind of thing. And I said to Amanda, do you want to go? And you said
– oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. It's like not even a hesitation. Like, Hollywood, are you kidding me? Red carpet, the whole thing. Wow. Again, it's another one of these things where – and we did it. It was quite an experience.
So I was talking with you earlier when you first came in the store about your experience with Doctor Strange and looking through some of the pages, and you were telling me, because I don't remember them from memory, but some of the pages you worked on, and if you compare them to some of the scenes in the movie, are almost, you know.
Well, that's what I was going to say, is that Jeff, he was telling us off the air, is that his story, or at least part of his story, was used
in
the movie.
Yeah, part of his origin retelling.
Yeah, it was in a series. It was issue 45. Roy Thomas wrote it, and we retold Doctor Strange's origin briefly as he has to conquer death. That was the point of it. And so he becomes the Sorcerer Supreme. And so there is a scene with the car crash, and just that angle of the car crash, if you recall it, that turns into slow motion.
Where
it's just
you can
like
see his fingers.
The down shot and his hands just grinding in like that. And I had drawn a half-page panel, all in horizontal lines to try and get that sense of movement. Mm. And I'm saying, I storyboarded this panel 25 years before they filmed it.
That's awesome.
And
that's
the genius
thing about comics is they're just giant storyboards.
That's all they are.
Well, yes and no, because comics are different from film. Mm-hmm. It's really a compressed shorthand way of telling a story. Mm-hmm. The reader really has to fill in a lot of blanks. And storyboarding for film, it seems similar in a way, but it's a sketchier type of drawing, and it's different. It has a different purpose in a way. So they are different.
Right.
But the funny thing is, I had no idea that they were using this for Doctor Strange for the movie, and so they invited me. And then at the end, my name was in the special thanks in the credits, which also surprised me. And no idea. Nobody said anything. And so, wow, that was a lot of fun. But it was, and going to the red carpet event was quite fascinating because we got to see the whole setup and how this really works as they close a block of Hollywood Boulevard and the whole street was laid out with stuff. And then Amanda and I went to it, so we were ready to go past, and they have the sponsor wall. And I thought, oh, are we going to walk in front of all – and there's this bank of like 60 feet of photographers and videographers. And the woman's saying, no, behind the wall, walk behind the wall.
That's so awesome.
Damn. We can't go, hi, everybody. You know, who's that, right? So
you were posted.
Yeah.
You, at that premiere, you were saying that you had the opportunity to meet the embodiment of Doctor Strange. You met Benedict Cumberbatch.
Yes.
How horrible was he?
Tell us all the gory details.
Oh, yes. Dormammu personified. Yeah. Well, it was an after-party thing, so we did get invited to that. And, of course, there were throngs of people around, and it was kind of hard to come across them.
Right.
Amanda's got a picture on the phone.
Oh, with you and Benedict?
Yes.
Oh, very cool.
Yeah, that was kind of
fun.
Mr.
Cabbage Patch himself.
I was able to, yeah.
That's crazy.
So here it is. It's on the phone. Nobody else can see it.
Yeah,
you know. Or it's on my Facebook anyway. But Scott, yeah, I did meet finally. On my fans. It's on Facebook. It's Fans of Jeffrey Isherwood. You can find them all there.
G-E-O-F.
Very cool.
G-E-O-F-F-R-E-Y Isherwood.
Fans of.
So I
was able to meet Scott and thank him profusely for inviting me to the premiere and letting us come to it and all
that.
Scott
is a very – Scott, I mean, I'm a fan of Scott's work. He's a very talented director, done some very good scary films that I've enjoyed immensely. So meeting him would have been very cool. So I'm assuming both of these guys were very nice gentlemen and they were – I'm assuming they thanked you for your work on Strange.
Well, he was – and I walked up and I said, I'm Jeff Isherwood. And he goes, oh, great. You know, it's like – because he had dug through all the Strange comics, and he's the one that picked out what he wanted, and obviously singled me out of my
latching on to your
He knew of my work, and it's like, oh, I made it to the premiere, because the only other person that we know went was Steve Englehart, and he sat next to us watching the film. He's a writer, and I worked with him on a comic called Justice for a few issues, so we never worked on Strange together, but so I knew him work wise. I'd never met him in person, but so Scott did that, and then we were – and Amanda's going, where is Benedict anyway? And I said, he's only right there, like 15 feet away. And he was just sitting down. He had a plate of food. I think he'd been on Kimmel or something, and it was 11 o'clock at night, and he hadn't eaten anything for all day. You know, it's like go, 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 right? So he finally sits down with the plate of food, and nobody was around him. And Tilda Swinton was nearby holding court. She had about 30 people swarmed all around her, and he was alone. His wife was sitting next to him, so – and she said, well, do you think we should talk to him? I said, it's now or never. Look, there's nobody there. Let's go, right? So we walked up, and of course I brazenly walked up. Hi, I'm Jeff Isherwood, one of the artists on the comic. He goes, oh, wonderful. That's amazing and awesome or whatever. You know, he's saying this, and Amanda's going, I can't believe it. He's going all fanboy over Jeff. And I'm that's backwards, right? And I'm like, yeah. So anyway – but I have to be like, oh yes, we're professionals here. Yes, wonderful work on the movie, you know. And he goes, well, how did you think I how did I portray the character and said, "Oh, you were dead on. You know, it's really great. Really, really enjoyed it." So, mutual admiration society all around.
Fantastic.
So we talked for a few minutes and figured that was enough. Amanda said, "Could we get a couple of pictures?" So we're standing next to each other, usually buddy buddy kind of thing.
With his plate of food.
Yeah. Well, yeah. So he went like I went like that, and he went whoop. So as soon, of course, I did Doctor Strange hand, and he saw me, and he was like, Oh, yes, yes, right. So it's like, yeah, I guess I'm the director and he's the actor. You know,
oh, too cool. Well, listen, Jeff, do you mind if I hold you overtime for a few minutes? I know you guys want to get out of here, but there's a couple questions I want to ask you because we got to say goodbye to our TV audience.
Okay.
So let me hold you over in a bit. I want to thank everybody for joining us on television. Stay tuned on the podcast. There will be exclusive content coming up very shortly. If you're watching on YouTube and or Akaku, of course, you can download our podcast on iTunes and on Audio Boom. So, of course, please follow us on Facebook at facebook.com/NerdWatch. Follow us on YouTube at NerdWatch Nation. Follow us on Twitter at NerdWatch Nation. And, of course, on Instagram at @_NerdWatch. We are here every single Tuesday at Maui Comics and Collectibles at 333 Derry Road, recording live and talking to amazing and interesting
and
people.
Check out
just
Jeff
like
Isherwood, Jeff fans Isherwood. Of Jeffrey Isherwood on
yes.
Facebook.
And last but not least, please, if you guys are in town, Jeff Isherwood will be here at Maui Comics and Collectibles Saturday, February 4th, doing commissions and sketches and signings. So make sure you guys check that out
awesome.
As well. All right, so stay tuned. If you're listening to the podcast, we've got more coming up. But for our TV audience, we're out of time. Peace out, much love, and most assuredly, always stay nerdy. And until next time, we say to you guys, aloha. Well, Facebook, look, here's the thing. We're back. Facebook Live is still going on. If you've got to you got to go anywhere, you're taking off. Leaving? All right, don't leave. All right, well, listen, we are here, Facebook Live. You guys can stick around. We are still here with Jeff Isherwood talking about his time with Doctor Strange, Mr. Benedict Cumberbatch, which is very cool. So, Jeff, some interesting things I wanted to talk about because I every time I talk to an artist about their work one of the things I'm always interested in, whether it be an independent comic book artist or a mainstream comic book artist, when you're an artist and you do projects like Doctor Strange and or Conan, and you are so talented at drawing, where does the talent come from when it comes to writing? Because that's a whole different vocation. How does that work?
It's writing. Well, I think. When you're, especially where we worked from the Marvel method, which was plot, and then we would take the plot and not a full script to draw the comic. So the theory was that the artist knows better how to tell a story visually. So that's just the nuts and bolts of telling the story. But to
right.
write a story from
right.
the get-go, well, and I have written some stories for Marvel, it's just understanding character, dramatic structure, and what have you, and just being able, so I don't know, it's just understanding that well enough, similar to drawing, so that you can tell the story effectively.
Right.
And I did get to meet Stan Lee in Providence in November, and I asked him. I said, I teach at college, and I want to ask you, what can I tell the students about comics or about creative work? And he says, tell the story that you want to tell. Don't look and see what does somebody else think. What do they want? What do they want? Tell a story that's true to yourself, and that's the most important thing you can do. And I figured, yeah, that's a very basic point he made, but it is very strong. And you have to believe what you're doing, and you have to understand your characters and the
right.
plot and all that. And just personally, I try not to have an ending because a lot of people will have to have a great setup. And they have the ending all figured out, and
right.
then they find a way to artificially manipulate everything in the middle to get to the ending they want, and then it falls flat. I like the idea of starting a story and not really knowing where it's going.
That's interesting.
And just things happen one after the next, and it just plays out. But the more it goes around, and the more you write, it just gets easier for your mind to conjure up new scenes and new situations and to play them out. So it's
right.
it's something that just happens through practice. It's the same as drawing, and it's not I heard something terrific about inspiration.
Right, right, right.
Inspiration doesn't happen from sitting around in your chair for 6 months thinking of how it's going to work. It's doing the work itself gives you more ideas while you're doing it.
Interesting.
I liken it to driving through the fog. You drive, you can only see like 100 feet ahead. But when you get to the 100 feet, you see another 100 feet.
Interesting.
It just slowly reveals until you run into a moose.
That makes sense. So I'm assuming that when you run into guys like the big name, the iconic names in comic books, like the guys like Stan Lee and Neil Adams, I'm assuming it's really nice to hear that they are admirers of your work and they enjoy what they've seen of your work.
Well, to some extent, yes. Certainly it's nice to hear that.
Being admired by your peers, I guess.
But yeah, I think all the artists do, and I think while you're drawing, you realize how difficult it really is.
Right.
That you can appreciate other people's talent for being different from yourself, but you can appreciate what they're putting into it. That's certainly true. So, also when you see amateur work and it's not there yet, and they're trying to sell it to you, you know exactly what isn't happening yet, mm-hmm. and the thing is, when you get experienced enough, you just can't be fooled. But you can also see stuff from kids that are raw, but right. you see they've got something. There's something in the way they draw it. They understand some perspective. They right. understand three-dimensionality. They understand these things. Mm-hmm. They just have to work at them. But you can always see the raw talent there, and you can see somebody who's been slugging away at it for 25 years, right. and they're never going to figure it out.
Right. Now that you're kind of on that subject, we have some very – here in the islands, we have some very talented local artists.
Yeah.
Guys like our very own Todd Bernardi, who he's in the mainland. He's doing the Albuquerque Comic-Con. He does a comic book called The Kukui Project and Disco Thunder Groovebone. Working on stories with a comic book artist. His name is DJ Calvicane, and he's working on some stories as well. What is some advice that you would give to these guys that, you know, they're literally publishing their own comics because it's in this yep. day and age you can do that now. What are some of the words of wisdom that you can give these guys that they can do, or how to make a better comic book or to be a better artist or a better writer? What kind of words of wisdom do you give them?
Well, it's really just a matter of sticking to it, keep doing the work, and listen to people that talk to you about it too. Get good feedback, and don't just ignore all that. You have to. Sometimes you get feedback, and you just say, "No, this just isn't it." But if you have somebody that's good, will give you some ideas. Listen, definitely, and yes.
That kind of reminds me of one of the local artists, Theo Lee here.
Yes,
who he's not formally trained or anything, but just very dedicated and works very hard at it, and he's gone and shopped his. Anytime somebody of note comes around, he'll show them his work and take the critiques to, you know, literally, yep. like he'll weather the slings and arrows as some people may not be able to. But he's very. His end goal is to just be a better artist, so he really is in it to win it.
Right.
He showed his stuff to Herb Trimpe. He was actually working on a Wolverine story with Herb Trimpe before he passed. Because Herb had an origin story for Wolverine that never got published. And Theo actually drew out a lot of it. So maybe someday we'll see that completed. He met Joe and stuff like that.
One of your friends, Mr. Rubenstein.
Yeah. Yeah. And so it's cool that I wish Theo was on. Right now he's at the Enjoy Comics grand opening. Anniversary on Big Island right now, supporting that store. Our friends at Enjoy Comics in Hilo. But, you know, if Theo were here, he would love to meet you because you're like an artist as well. So he, you know,
maybe he'll be back in the next week and a half. I'm coming back.
Theo, get over here.
So, I was just about to say that the other reason why I held you over, and like I said, I don't want to keep you too long because I know you got your lovely wife here and you guys want to enjoy the rest of Maui, but I do.
In the pitch black darkness.
Yeah, the wee hours of nearly 10 o'clock.
You know, see them night marchers people are always talking about.
Go to Denny's.
To Denny's?
Oh, hey. Also, a shout out to my friends Poi by the Pound, who are moving into that spot, which is a local restaurant There's a guy, CJ Ho'okano, from KNI, where they get their poi. The poi comes from KNI.
Nice, it's fantastic.
Local food by local people. Right. And they're moving into Denny's, so I'm not sad Denny's is gone.
Uh-huh. So when
am I going to get a grand slam now, though, Alika? Yeah.
So when are we? When are you taking Jeff to Poi by the Pound? Then
what I want to know what's the best way to eat poi?
With fish or something salty? I don't know. It's like if it's your first time eating it, you got to have it with something else because there's some people who just like appreciate the taste of good poi by itself. But some people mix it with lomi salmon, or if you had it with kalua pig, just get the Hawaiian plate. It's got all the good stuff to mix into the poi that you want.
Here's what I, and this is coming from a guy who
get
is
some feral pig, huh?
Yeah,
well,
exactly.
It's delicious. Number one, my mother kind of raised me on that stuff. I'm Filipino and of course, howly, as they say.
Oh, I'm a howley too.
Oh, you are.
I'm absolutely a howley.
I never would have guessed that. My mother eased me in as a young child, and what she would do for those that are uninitiated, and it is a bit of sacrilege for those that are Hawaiian, but what worked out for me, and I got appreciation for the taste of it, and then moved on to
sugar in there.
My mother, as a youngster, because it's so good for you can digest it as a youngster. Mm. You just do a little bit of sugar and a little half on the top of it, and it works.
Like oatmeal,
like my
youngest son was raised on poi, and that kid is a tank. He weighs the same amount as his brother, who is 4 years older than him.
It's a starchy food, right?
It's a root vegetable.
Yeah. So we got to take Jeff and his wife to get some poi somewhere.
Sure. Yeah. Well, they're here for 2 weeks. So
good.
And they come for the appearance. If you're open to, I don't know, you guys were like stoked to get burgers and fries today, so I didn't know if like you're too down.
Yeah, but the burgers here are good.
They're good burgers.
Does that come from the local ranch here?
There's Hana Ranch beef.
Yeah, Hana Ranch beef. Yeah, yeah.
Which is really good beef.
But listen, what I wanted to do before we take off is that I wanted you to share a few stories about your run-ins with some of the people that we've interviewed, guys like Chris Claremont and all these other guys. Okay. Any interesting stories that you can share as a con?
You kind of said it like what was the Seinfeld character? Newman. Claremont.
Oh, Chris is fine. He's a very good-natured fellow.
Yes, we love
him.
Podcast interviewed him, and we love Chris Claremont because he would not
He
would not leave.
Oh, it was great, man.
It was fantastic. He would not shut up.
His wife had to drag
his
him away.
His wife was mad at us.
His wife was upset that he would not leave our podcast.
She took his microphone away, and I put my microphone in front of him so he could keep talking.
It's kind of like the way he would write dialogue in X-Men comics. Like there's little... I was looking back at those later, and I'd see balloon, little tiny head. And John Byrne was
like
drawing these little tiny pictures of him. And I'd think, wow, what a job drawing this comic. First you got to draw all these characters, then you have to draw them really tiny, which is not much fun.
Well, I just wanted to talk a little about your adventures at the cons that you have that tour around in and stuff, and the people that you, of course, run
Simon
into.
Bisley, of course.
Yeah, that was a pretty good impression you had.
Simon Bisley. Simon Bisley is kind of the Oliver Reed of the comics.
I am a huge Turtles fan, so anybody who's ever intersected with that world, Simon Bisley, of course, did Body Count.
Yeah,
on the Image imprint with Kevin Eastman,
but Simon's like seems so completely, I mean, personality wise, very opposite of me. And we were in New Jersey last spring, and I'm just going down to eat my breakfast, and he comes up, Jeff, come over here, hey buddy, sit down with me. And I'm going, me? What? Yeah, come over, sit down. And then so he starts telling me how he's drawing the latest comic he had to do. Because we're talking, how much are you doing? He goes, oh, I'm doing a couple of 22 page comics a month. One's for a brewery, you know. And I've got this other. And I said, yeah, well. He goes, yeah, well, I can draw really fast, you know. That's how I do it. I draw like 4 pages. I can do a page in 2 hours. 4 pages in a day. I've got to. So, well, he goes, well, first of all, this is storytelling. Okay, Simon Bisley storytelling. I'll do this quick one. He goes, first of all, we got this panel. The script says, I want Captain So-and-so's riding his bike through town, whatever. So, he goes, it's a bicycle, not a motorcycle, a bike. So I said, okay, draw it. And so my first panel is this.
Your first fella is
you know what it is.
Like,
you got hands, you got a face, handlebars. You know what he's doing. Next page, a line across the bottom. I draw a little silhouette of the guy, right? And then it's like, what?
Are you okay with language on this program?
Sure.
Yes.
I can bleep it out
for you, of course.
Of course.
Well, it's Simon. It's not me.
Okay.
And he goes. I know I draw. Draw this peak, you know, bicycle with all these fucking spokes all over the place. I just want to draw this little thing like this. And then next thing is.
And I got the next page, okay. And the guy writes, get this. I want a Hieronymus Bosch like painting of women being tortured by demons. I mean, you've seen his paintings. I spent a whole month drawing one of these, you know, little guys. So he says, I've got it. This is what I do. I took a page like this, I got half the page. And I drew this giant demon face going, the other page, half the page, that was easy. And I draw a line, and I draw three women hanging like silhouette, and then down here I got a cauldron, and like a demon churning like this, and his face looking up going, bang, it's 2 hours, it's done. What's this Hieronymus Bosch crap, you know?
That was storytelling from Simon Bisley, and but the funny thing is, was before that in Montreal, it was a Sunday morning. We were about to go home, and he would suppose with all this drunken carousing supposed going on. Anyway, he comes down and he says, "Oh, I'll just have some coffee, and I'll go get myself in shape before I go home. I've got a wife, got a couple of daughters, you know, a couple of cats and all this. I don't want to cause any trouble when I get home." So I thought, oh, that's the dick. That's the thing. When he's home, he's a very hardworking, straightforward guy. He goes to a convention, he can cut loose. Okay, so that's what everybody does.
Yeah, you
comic. That's what conventions are for, apparently.
Yeah, you comic book men are so slowly. Wild.
Oh, yeah.
Right. Well, there's one thing I've learned is that comic book guys like to drink. They do. There have been... I mean, that's how we socialize
right?
with everybody we
yeah,
meet.
Yeah, it's kind of what, you know.
Are you a drinker like the rest
no,
of us?
No, not anymore.
Not anymore? Oh, okay.
Not, I wasn't, didn't, wasn't.
Like the rest of your ilk?
Apparently.
My problem is I drink a beer, get really funny and happy, and then I fall asleep.
Nice.
So
oh, I'm
it's
there.
Not really
yeah,
good.
I'm
so
in death
mode. I live on caffeine now.
No, oh, gotcha.
Yeah, that's
gotcha.
It. Gotcha. No, I don't. I don't anymore.
Anyone else as eccentric as... Mr. Bisley?
Oh, there are probably lots. Good friends with Bob Kemp of Ren and Stimpy fame.
Tell me
Bob
the story
Kemp is
now.
Great.
I need story time. Sorry,
oh,
I'm
he's
a huge animation fan.
Bob's just
incredible.
A great guy.
Wow.
He's just a great guy. He's so funny. And he gets these long lists of commission requests, and he turns Ren and Stimpy into any kind of two characters you can ever think of. And he's a genius.
Oh,
he's
incredible.
Brilliant. Just pencil drawings. He just starts going like mad. He draws them. So he does a lot of shows now. That's pretty much what he's doing. He says he's...
Is it mostly in the Canada area? Like
no, he lives in New Jersey, and he goes all over the place. And he's everywhere.
I haven't been to any cons in the mainland. I would love to run into Bob Kemp. Oh, my goodness.
Yeah. He's and like, he teaches a storyboarding class at the School for Visual Arts in New York City once a week, I guess midweek. And then he goes to conventions on weekends, and that's
wow.
That's pretty much what he's doing.
Wow.
Yeah.
Now, I guess with you being an artist, when you look at the people that you're like we're talking about your peers, how do you stand out with your art with the other folks that you have? Like is there a definition of what art you do or you describe it as when
well,
you're drawing?
I already told you I don't know what my style is.
Oh, you don't have right, you don't have
well, what but I my emphasis I do try to emphasize the acting facial expressions, and I like to put hands in for gesture.
After you had discussed that about the facial, and I was kind of flipping through your book, and that's something that really does stand out, and you like it is a cop out because so many heroes have masks, and everybody has you can't it obscures the face and everything, and you go towards the feet characters like Namor or Conan who are barefaced,
right.
It's the anatomy.
Yeah. And it's incredible. But the expressiveness, the subtlety, because it's not like everyone's going, ooh, like making a big, weird face. It's like subtle facial things which, you know, show drama a lot, like the mood a lot more.
Right.
Well, that can work and it can't. Bob Layton from Iron Man said, "Comics, superhero comics is like opera. It's the grand gesture. It's the big costumes. It's all this kind of overdone stuff." So that's to draw regular stuff compared to superheroes. The superhero stuff, you have to – a lot of times I will just lay out a page, and then when I redo it, I have to pump it up to make it fit.
Interesting.
The superhero types thing. But that's what he said. But what you say is I try to read every situation out and just – imagine, okay, if that was me, how would I be reacting, or if I was this character? You know, it's pretty straightforward.
It kind of adds a dimension to looking at your pages now that I've seen them, because I'm beginning to notice the facial expressions are really...
A big problem with the plot method, though, was artists would get the plots, and then they wouldn't have dialogue like they do with full scripts, and so they didn't really know what the character should be doing necessarily. Yeah. So then they wound up, you see a lot of the comics where they just had kind of semi-blank or stock expressions because they couldn't figure it out. Whereas I would get the thing and I have to see the scene play out as a movie, kind of in a movie-esque way. And every panel has to make sense, or else if it doesn't make any sense to me, it's not going to anybody else. Right. So I draw it that way. And yes, if I can revisit these things and I can come up with different camera angles and probably find ways to tell it better. But you have only so much time, so you have to start going with your instinct more. But when you do that regularly, and I find it's much better to try to lay out the entire story in one shot,
right,
because then you get into that frame of mind just to do storytelling. Once that's done, it becomes just an exercise in good drawing. So I studying anatomy, and I still, and the thing is that at college I'm teaching life drawing classes, so even now I keep learning more little things that I can use. And the thing I like about it is a lot of students, for example, they really don't know much about anatomy, but once they learn something, they can't go back. If you used to draw something really wrong, once you know what it should be, you can't go back.
Right.
It's a double-edged sword. So in a way, it's good because your work will just look more convincing.
Isn't that
to people?
Kind of like, kind of one of the fears of art students too? And I'm just like speaking to something that I might have thought is like people are worried about losing their identity or their style when they become trained artists.
Well, as Neil Adams told me, your drawing style is everything you do wrong.
That's pretty true, though. It really is.
That's a good point.
Because
that's
the things that you look at in other, like Kirby, the things that define him are things that people would be like, who don't know art or who Kirby is,
right,
would pick apart and just like hate about it. You know what I mean?
Yeah, but then again, he was churning out the pages so fast that he just developed this very simple kind of style of drawing, of story of drawing. That's just the way he developed, because he could draw very, very realistically if he wanted to, but he was drawing four to six pages a day.
He was creating the Marvel Age.
Cranking this stuff out.
That goes back to what you were saying earlier about just doing the work, and that's what he was doing. He was just pumping out the work. That's interesting.
You have to, and you don't have time to think about it.
Right.
You can't second guess yourself. You just go, go, go. So, but then that's the thing. Once you get into working like that all the time, you just reach a level and you can operate that way. Just like, I don't know, a boxer gets himself trained and in shape to box, and if the fight's over, he doesn't do anything for a couple of months, he knows he's not in shape.
Right.
It's just, or any athlete, you have to get back
or
in
like
game shape.
Jeff Isherwood comes to a vacation on Maui with his beautiful wife and decides to draw on the beach.
Well, I got to!
So, speaking of that, Jeff...
And that's what I have to give Amanda a lot of credit, because for a few years... I hadn't been drawing comics for a long time, and she says, "Well, aren't you going to these conventions?" I said, "Well, no, who knows me anymore? I don't draw. I've got nothing new to show anybody, no real new work or anything." And she goes, "Doesn't really matter. Let's see what happens." So she kind of pushed that point, and
thank you, Amanda.
Yeah, and so what's happened? yeah, and that was the other thing too was to get. I sell a lot of prints at the shows. I don't have any with me here, but at regular conventions, it was something for kids that they could get cheaper. Instead of having
to spend it's like a to lot get original of, pieces, you put some money out there because that's each piece is your work. Whereas a print is like, oh, just print
it. But it's more for kids or whatever. But that became kind of a thing to do. So So I have, you know, it shows I have those. Of course, there are a lot of people do these days, but I've decided that I want to do that for the kids in that sense. And then the sketch covers have become very popular and just
incredibly popular
and stuff. Yes. And
these
so,
ones that you did here, The Amazing Spider-Man. Kai, can you walk that up so the camera just so Facebook Live can see that? Yeah.
So it's a that's just it's pencil so far. I haven't finished it yet.
Yeah, these are all pencil. They're not inked yet.
It's but, interesting that we.
But I drew them all today, this morning.
Since you
on your vacation.
Yep.
When you look at,
but it's in your DNA to do it. That's why.
When you look at comics, when you were in the midst of doing them, and you look at comics now, do you that's the reaction I was looking for, not the business end of it, but when you look at comics when you were doing them and where we are now, what do you see?
Stand of the world.
Okay. Well, first of all, Wacky Raceland. Is it Leonardo Manco? That guy, I give him tons of credit because he had to make. Have you seen that?
Yeah, it's completely not anything like.
I haven't had a chance to see that at all.
It's oh, this guy's
wacky. It's not on the shelf.
But he's got so much script in store with all these characters and all this stuff. He had to design the characters, the cars, everything. He's done an amazing job. I give him a lot of credit for like when you've done had to create stuff on the fly almost.
Yeah. Create's the right word for it because other worlds you kind of step into and they're like, oh, there's this. You draw this like this, but. It's a photorealistic Wacky Raceland, post-apocalyptic.
Yeah,
it's
really
like
fun.
Crazy, yeah. It's nothing like the Hanna-Barbera cartoon.
But in general, I find what's happened is, yes, the drawing style is different. In general, and this is not everybody, but I find in general the heroes are made to look more realistic or photographic in a way, and it's almost like. The cosplayers are out there playing the characters at the conventions, so they're starting to make the superheroes look like the cosplayers, so they can match up. So what that means to me is the superheroes are becoming detuned. They no longer are these big mythical type of characters. They've tuned them down and made them just more human, which to me kind of kills the whole point of it. And a lot of the drawing there is much more simplified because they're letting the colorists deal with all the color possibilities and the full painterly effects. The ink drawing is much simpler. Now, you can't have a fully inked and rendered page like I used to be doing because I had flat color, so I could do that. You can't really do that and mix it with full rendered color because they compete with each other.
Interesting.
But I find that just from a lot of things, the cover often looks fantastic, and you turn to page one, and you go, what happened? So there are a lot of comics. I have to say maybe it's – I feel I'm some sort of elitist or something, but do you know Ron Sutton? He did Elvira comics for a long time.
Interesting. Yeah.
He was talking about – when we went to see a couple of the movies.
Was this
with
back
him.
In the House of Mystery, Elvira comics?
Elvira was a Claymore. Claymore Publishing. It wasn't DC. Anyways, he lives in Ottawa. He lives in Ottawa with us, so near us. So we've been to the movies, and he said what he didn't like about the Marvel versions, and this is a little different. Mm. The Marvel versions of the movies, the movie versions versus the comics. Mm-hmm. He said the thing that I like about comics is the artwork, and that's the one thing that's missing from the movies is the drawing. I said, that's a very interesting point, because we've all kind of accepted the fact that movies are not the same as the comics.
Right.
It's a parallel adaptation. And yes, the actual artwork is what's lacking. And this is what he grew up loving. He's lived with Bernie Wrightson for a while when he was young.
Wow.
I stayed in his place and stuff. So, and I grew up right at that time when the studio, Winsor Smith and Wrightson and Kaluta and these guys and Jeff Jones, they were the artist I was looking at in Adams when he was with his realistic. So these were the ones that those were my inspiration, those type of artists. So I always tended to gravitate towards the art first. And it's funny, a lot of the stories I don't remember. People, fans will say, oh, do you remember the story about blah, 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 blah? And I said, I don't know. I remember the artwork. I remember certain panels, drawings. That's what hit me. And maybe that's sort of a failing of somebody who's an artist first and not anything else.
Not really, because a lot of the fans will kind of just remember panels too. Sometimes it's just a panel that'll.
Well, that's what Doctor Strange got a lot of praise for, was that they had
kind of
really
translating
they,
a little bit of they, that Ditko style.
That Steve Ditko, yes, right. That scene where, you know, he is taken into the,
they go to the timeless dimension,
the dark dimension. No, whatever. Yeah. But I don't get this giant purple Dormammu head thing though. Like,
I think they're trying to match the comic art, because Disney, to a fault, is faithful to the costumes, which I love them for. I thank you for that, but. It's like, and then you go to Dormammu, who's drawn as a purple guy with little flames around his head and lines down.
Oh.
And you're like, how are we going to do this? A ski mask? And then,
But no, but we, yeah, the first time we see the dark dimension, I guess that's the Ditko panel, right? You could spot
with the balls connected by energy and all that.
And that was really, really cool, because they had really taken the time to do that, which was very fast. Sure. That was very cool.
But
for
that's what
them to do
Derrickson
that.
Did is he combed through tons of Strange comics to pick out the material for this movie, and so choices to go into that. I love, there are certain things I really enjoyed about it. Wong, for example, we met the actor too at the end of the movie. He was all wound up and excited. That was fun.
DB, right? DB Wong, is it?
Yes.
Benedict Wong, I think. I can't remember.
Benedict Wong. Yeah. I like the Sanctum Sanctorum, the way it was set up, like a museum kind of.
Mm-hmm.
That was interesting.
That was awesome.
And the other library was fascinating, and then of course the Cloak of Levitation having so much mind of its own was a real fun, humorous touch. I really enjoyed
it. Yeah, yeah, for sure. Are there any books that you're currently reading that we should be paying attention to, independent or mainstream or otherwise?
Nah, not really. Because I have to admit I have no time. This is a thing for fans you should realize. When I started drawing comics in 1983 full time, my reading dropped to almost nothing because I was drawing comics 7 days a week. That's the job.
Yeah.
To get it done, that was it. And to this day, I'm still working 7 days a week at whatever it is. I'm teaching a couple days a week. I'm drawing the other five. I'm working on a comic right now called Necromantic. It's the fourth issue of four. Dave Ross drew the first three. Laverne Kinzierski wrote it. And it's going to be published by Renegade Media out of Alberta in Canada.
Oh, cool.
So that's when I've got 10 pages left to go on that 30-page story. And then they're going to be able to publish that set of four at once. So that's something new that I'm working on.
Do they distribute their Diamond Renegade?
Yes.
Okay.
You remember John Bolton's Shame?
Yes. Yeah,
comic.
Yeah.
You've seen those. That's the publisher.
Because John Bolton worked with Chris Claremont.
Yeah.
And that's how we had learned about his stuff.
Okay.
Yeah.
Now, Jeff, I think I have, unless anyone else has any questions, I got four last questions that are all related.
Okay. They're one word answers. Here we go.
And they kind of will be. Here's the first two. I'll start with, here's this. Your favorite character that you enjoy reading?
Splunge.
Which is?
Remember Monty Python?
Uh-huh.
Monty Python, but what is
it? I don't remember
Splunge,
that.
Did you say?
Splunge. He goes, do you like it or not? First the guy goes, oh, yeah, I think it's great. Yeah, you bloody brown noser, you're out. You're fired. Next guy, what do you think? Oh, I hate it. Ah, you idiot. Next, Splunge. What? Yeah, Splunge. Oh, all right. Next. Say Splunge, too. Splunge.
Good answer.
Find that one. That's a great one.
And I mean that as in now or ever. I mean, what? Your favorite character as a reader that you enjoyed.
Bugs Bunny?
Really?
No. I'm thoroughly drawn to Bugs Bunny stuff. You know. For comics, though, I still like reading Conan stuff. I drew Conan and Doctor Strange are probably the two characters. Originally, it was Spider-Man. Mm-hmm. But those other two, and they're so opposite from each other, really. Yeah. But those are the two that I was able to draw. I really enjoyed them.
And for people my age, the Doctor Strange run you did is pretty memorable, because there was a lot of stuff going in the 90s. To have anything that stuck out is hard.
Right. I know. There was a lot of stuff that I was just cringing at myself. And Marvel used to send me everything, Marvel and DC, and I just looked at the comics, and I just going, oh, man, I wasn't interested. I gave them to a couple of kids, you know, so they could read something, you know.
All right. Next question. Least favorite character as a reader?
Oh, at least. Wow. Probably a lot of stuff I never read at all, so what can I say?
Yeah, like why would you dedicate any time to your least favorite?
Well, when you've read something, have you gone, that character is garbage, I can't think of anything.
It's funny because it's probably not the character, it's probably the writer and artist team that just put it together in a way that I wasn't interested in. But
interesting.
I can't really pinpoint anything off the top of my head, no.
All right, here's the other two questions then. Favorite character you've worked on as an artist?
Well, he said his favorite character artist is Conan and his artist.
I know, right? But that could be different, though. I mean, there, as an artist, that could be something.
I would say, to pick between Conan and Doctor Strange is tough. I really got into Marvel because I wanted to draw Conan, and I think ultimately I still liked, given a choice, I would draw Conan again.
Wow. Fascinating. You would go with Dark
Horse. Hello, Dark Horse. And
if you're listening, Dark Horse.
Where have you been all these years?
Which I heard are really great publishers, like the guy is super easy to deal with or whatever from folks I've heard from.
Yeah, the only thing I ever did for Dark Horse was Barry Windsor Smith's first storyteller, you know, his big book there?
Yeah, yeah.
I inked a bunch of pages in the first issue of that till he said he couldn't afford to pay me more, and that was the end. So that was it. I said, okay, thanks, Barry. It was great working over you. I learned a lot, I have to say.
All right. The least favorite character you've ever worked on in a comic? Or you didn't enjoy doing it?
I think it was Broadway comics. Because it was Starseed.
Because Starseed?
For Broadway. Remember Jim Shooter had his own thing going for a while?
Mm-hmm.
There was some stuff that was sort of too ultra-violent that I didn't – or just kind of nasty that I didn't really like drawing.
Too gratuitous.
Yeah. There's certain things I just didn't like, and I thought, well, it's the story, but given the choice, I'm not really happy drawing this kind of thing. And so, yeah, it was sort of gratuitously over-violent, like a character – he would have a shield that was so super sharp it could just slice things. So it's like he would just slice off hands and stuff. Sure. Like what? Why?
You know, it goes to shake someone's hand. Oh, sorry about that.
Zip, you know, but it wasn't done for a humor reason. It was just kind of stupid. So
interesting.
Those ones I wasn't really too thrilled with. Sorry, Jim.
I'll admit I was looking for that very controversial answer. Like I couldn't stand working on Batman.
Oh no, Batman's great too. Yeah. If it was Batman, I always prefer a story though that's got the detective element to it.
That's the
Batman I like best.
Yeah, I agree with you on that. Now, before we get out of here, Jeff,
four more questions.
I've got four other questions. No, I'm just kidding.
Sound like my mother when she says, "Oh, can you take me to the store?" And when we get there, "Oh, I've just got these like other three little places we have to go."
I got some dry cleaning I need picked up.
You just know that's not going to end at one.
I need to know first of all where we can find you, and number two, is there anything that you're working on that you'd like to talk about?
Well, I just talked about Necromantic,
right?
So there you have it.
Okay, so Necromantic, when can we expect to see that?
Yeah. Probably within
a
few months of when it's done, and it's like I said, I got 10 pages left to ink, and that'll be done in February for sure.
Okay,
so I would say probably I don't know. I don't know specifically, but spring summer they're going to come out.
Cool.
And I suspect.
How long is that issue? Four run issue.
30 pages. Per story, and I suspect he'll just publish them monthly because if you wait more than a month, if it's bi-monthly, as you know, that's death in comics. So you've got to put out something monthly. That's why he's waiting for it to be completed, so it's not like put out two or three and then a year later something else happens.
Got it.
Yeah, and
where can we find you?
For me, I have a website. Jeffrey Isherwood, all one word, .ca. And
one of them Canadian internets, huh?
Yeah, I know. It's a lot easier to get that.
Much more polite up there.
Yeah, oh, sure. Yeah, well, cheaper. And I'm on Facebook at Jeff Isherwood is my Facebook page, and fans of Jeffrey Isherwood is my fans page.
Cool.
So the other friends said, well, I must admit I'm often a little slow getting to friend requests. So I read it here and there, but there are times when I really get busy and I don't have a lot of time to do that. So it goes off and on, and it's just,
well, yeah, people can come and look at the art at the fans page. Yeah.
Fans page is the best, and otherwise, it's I'll just share some funny cartoons of Trump that. Oh yes,
or,
Instagram too. That's true because when I do, if I'm at a convention, do these sketch cover drawings,
sure, sure.
I will finish one and put it up on Instagram.
And so what is your Instagram? Cool. Because I actually was looking for that.
Isherwood Art.
Okay. And then, of course, if we really want to get involved in into Isherwood, we take your college class, which is where?
Algonquin College in Ottawa. It's a community college, essentially. It does have 18,000 students, but it's a career-oriented, more what you used to call a trade school. In a way, it's academic and trade. But so I teach in the illustration illustration and concept art program, which is the only one of its kind in the country to really focus on concept art. Algonquin has a fantastic animation program. Generally speaking, almost like I'd say 90% of the people who graduate from there every year have a job in animation or are soon to be hired. They also have a fantastic game development program, which video games used to be just people from any old background got together to design games, but now they have a fully dedicated and a really good program. I taught some drawing in that. It's a lot of coding, and it's really tough. I think it's the most difficult program in the school, from what I hear, because only about 25% of the students make it through the entire 3-year process.
Right.
Because it's just grinds you down. But if you can handle the coding, you've got a pretty good job in video games.
So that's Algonquin College?
That's Algonquin College in Ottawa, Ontario.
Right. So what you're saying, it is nerd college. Gaming, animation, right up our alley.
In that sense, yes. There are plenty of those. I mean, they have a lot of other programs, of course, but yeah, a lot of gamers, that's for sure.
And they have you, a legend in the comic book business.
Well,
yeah.
Whatever, you know. I'm still alive. Does that mean I'm still alive? I don't know if I should be a legend yet.
Well, just in case I don't ever talk to you again. Just in case.
okay. Yeah. Well.
At least I said it once.
At least I said it this time. But in all honesty, Jeff, thank you so much for being on our show. It has been I very rarely ever take extra time out to interview because I know people got to go, but it's been an absolute joy speaking with you and learning about your experiences in the business and just a really fun time talking to you. So thank you so much for being on the Nerd Watch. We certainly do appreciate it. We hope to have you back soon.
Sure. And I'll just give a last couple of quick points.
Sure, please.
For young people or whoever want to get into art, two things you want to learn: anatomy, figure drawing, and perspective. If you learn those two, everything else is relatively easy and you can follow.
So what you're saying is Rob Liefeld should take your class.
Oh, man.
Dude.
You know,
he's got to call him out by name, man.
He's much maligned, but you have to look at why was he so popular.
Okay.
You have to stand back and say, what did he have?
Exactly.
So he drew things in a way that resonated with fans. I mean, of course he's.
You're just trying to start a war,
Mr.
between
Isherwood,
me and Adam.
Defend that. Do not defend. I'm just kidding.
I know, but if somebody's really sold a lot of comics and been very popular for, there's got to be a reason.
In the 90s, I loved pouches.
Yeah, I've been explaining me too.
So there's that, and the other thing is, I was so settled on comics from the age of 10, and not many people figure out what they want to do at that age. But, of course, by the end of the 90s, comics dried up, and I had to look elsewhere. So, in other words, if you're going to go into art, sure, it's great to have a specific goal of an industry you want to go into, but you have to keep your options open, be as versatile as possible. And you were asking about doing different types of jobs. Mm-hmm. Well, it's actually kind of fun when you get a different job offer coming up from a new movie or something like that. It's something new. It's something different. And it's something you can sink your teeth into that's not the usual or not what you've done before. So that is always kind of fun. So by that token, it's definitely good to think versatile, be ready to go a lot of different directions, and keep working at it. There's no real trick to it. You just have to work at it. And what I usually tell my students is I ask them, how many of you really want to get into this industry and want to get into drawing? And saying, yeah, some of them do. And I said, okay, how many of you need to do this? It's in your DNA. You don't have a choice. You draw. That's just what you do.
Interesting.
And those that people, if you feel like it, that's you, you're probably going to succeed in some shape or form. And that's kind of what it takes. And unfortunately, if you don't have that, it might not happen. But right. You also have to be very honest with yourself. But at the same time, I push creativity for anybody.
Right.
It's not comics. You could be fixing your car,
sure.
And you're really into car parts.
Mechanic
stuff.
Yeah.
But you can be very creative with that.
Sure.
Pick anything. Do something that's fun.
Mm-hmm.
Do something you enjoy. And you'll just be a happier person.
Fantastic.
And buy comics.
And it's always nice, the fact that your work has seen a renaissance in the last few years, which is probably great for you and your peers.
Well, yeah, and a lot of artists my age are still working and still getting better at it. That's the thing. Like, so many artists I know are kind of lamenting the fact that I've been left behind, but still doing a lot of good work. So it's still all out there.
All right. Well, ladies and gentlemen, thank you so much for joining us. Jeff, thank you for joining the Nerdwatch. Thank you, sir. Mr. Isherwood, hopefully we'll be back soon. I hope that you enjoy the rest of your vacation here in the lovely island of Maui.
Oh, sure.
Once again, let me stress that Jeff Isherwood will be here at Maui Comics and Collectibles February 4th. Do we have a time on that, sir?
Yep. 1 to 6 about.
Yes.
Once you guys get here. It's Maui time.
Mm-hmm.
We're not going to be strict all the time.
Let's
be real with it.
If don't ask Jeff, ask his handler.
Yeah, that's right.
AKA his wife.
Amanda's got it all figured out.
Good. So make sure you guys come and enjoy his artwork, get some signatures, commissions, and, of course, sketches, all done courtesy of a legend in the comic book business, Mr. Jeff Isherwood. We are out of time. Please follow us on Facebook at facebook.com/nerdwatch. Follow us on Twitter at Nerdwatch Nation. Follow us on Instagram at @the_nerdwatch and on YouTube at Nerdwatch Nation. So for Alika, for Format, for Ganon, and of course, the one and only Jeff Isherwood. IMG Money, peace out, much love, and most assuredly, always stay nerdy. And until next week, we say to you guys, aloha!